time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
So, Hard Knocks has come and gone with the last episode airing last night. I think there's a total of 5 episodes. The first 3 I thought were good. Episode 4 was a little bit boring. I did not watch episode 5 yet. I'm going to do that tonight, catch up on all my TV. But you knew going into this that Joe Douglas, the Jets general manager, was not going to show players getting cut. And this is why he didn't want to do that, according to the Green Light podcast.
When we found out we were doing Hard Knocks, it was really cool because Robert immediately texted me. He's like, I don't want to show any players getting cut. And I'm like, brother, we see it the exact same way. Like, there's no way we're gonna do that. Like, these kids put their heart and soul into this thing every day. And we're not going to exploit one of the worst moments in their life. We're not doing that. Like, those are brutal conversations. And having to be the Turk on the show before, you just think about the players and you think about everything that they put into this game and that they've lived and died for this moment for their whole life. And we're gonna protect that.
So that people had no clue what he was talking about when the Ravens were on Hard Knocks. A young Joe Douglas was actually the guy that would have to walk up to the player and say, so-and-so, coach needs to see you, the GM needs to see you, and he would escort them to their office, and then, boom, they would cut the player. From what I read, that they showed more, and I saw a social media clip, because everything's on social media now, of players that made the team that were on the bubble compared to players getting cut. I have no problem if you're going to show that, but I'm sure that many teams are going to follow this trend now. Because I think Hard Knocks is still important. I know that it's kind of gotten dull a little bit the last few years. I thought this year was really good since having Aaron Rodgers on the show, and it was compelling for the most part. The last good Hard Knocks where they had some drama and some serious beef that they showed was going back to the Cleveland Browns with that whole situation with Todd Haley and Hugh Jackson, and you had the funny character of Bob Wiley as well. But you look at Hard Knocks. Is it necessary? No, but I think they'll continue to do it, because even look at this quarterback show that some said was going to replace Hard Knocks. They can't even find any quarterbacks, and that was well reviewed after the first year with Kirk Cousins, Marcus Mariota, and then also Patrick Mahomes. So the NFL still wants this out there, and I've seen Jet fans say that Hard Knocks was better than that one Jets Drive show that's done in-house. So I'm not upset that they didn't show players getting cut. I think it's better for us as a viewer to kind of see it. But it's not as if it's the end of the world that you can't do a show. Because for the most part, this was still a solid, good season of Hard Knocks, Icky.
I mean, I don't need to see players getting cut. Like, actually, in the GM room, hey, unfortunately, we're going to have to cut you. I don't care. What I care about is storylines. Are players going to make it? Like, the players on the bubble, you can still have it where you can follow them and build up the storyline if they're going to make the team or not, and not show them getting cut, like the exact moment they're getting cut, and still be able to finish a story either way.
So the returner and the young wide receiver that were on the bubble for the Jets, they both made the team.
Yes.
So they did highlight the good story of those guys. Now, they didn't know that both players were definitely going to make the teams with how early they did highlight it, but maybe it was trending in that direction. I just wonder how they would have covered it if, let's say, that player didn't make the team.
Well, I think Jeremy Kapp, who was the man who did the Eminem rendition 8 Mile, he did not make the team. I think they made some mention of it.
He got to mention
on
it.
The show that he did not make the team. You can, that's fine. You followed him a little bit. Again, I would like to see more of, following these guys on the bubble instead of just kind of a courtesy mention here and there, and let's go back to Aaron Rodgers. And see what he's yelling at.
Rodgers is the storyline. That's the biggest storyline.
But that's what Hard Knocks, why people like the show. It's if you're not going to show personality off the field, that's where it kind of loses its luster.
Well, you don't think they did that in this season? I think they showed a lot of Rodgers. They showed a lot of Quinnen Williams. And he has a great personality. You had the player you were just talking about doing the Eminem rapping after the first just disgraceful performance in the rookie show. You got a little bit of Michael Carter in there too, friend of the show. I think they did a fine job. I didn't really have a problem with the approach.
I would have liked more if you're going to talk about Aaron Rodgers off the field, how he got. They showed a lot of Aaron Rodgers,
they did a lot
but
of that.
Not a lot of Aaron Rodgers that like, I think people actually care about or
want to
know.
What do you want them to follow him into a cave or
some
ayahuasca?
No, but like, why'd you leave, Aaron? Like, why'd you want to go to the Jets?
We all know that.
We have no idea why I want to go to the Jets. In theory, we have no idea.
Because he hated Brian Gutekunst.
But I'm saying, like, ask him. Get him, like, Aaron, how'd you end up here?
We all know the answers to that question.
Why can't you answer it? Like,
nothing would have been earth-shattering from that. Nothing would have been. He's not going to reveal anything to the Hard Knocks cameras. Unless you had the big voiceover guy ask him those questions. Then he would have done whatever.
You know what? That was a door open, and they did not walk through it.
Okay. Jason Kelce says, Travis Kelce, his brother, avoided serious injury. This was earlier this morning on the WIP Morning Show in Philadelphia.
It sounds like as long as they can get that down, he's going to have a chance to go. The ligaments and everything are intact structurally. From what we know right now, his knee's fine. So really it's about getting that swelling down and then seeing how bruised that bone is. Because, you know, if you guys have ever had those, they can be pretty painful, especially if it's in a spot that's rubbing all the time. Mm. And that can kind of shut down your muscles and do other things. But I think he's going to be good to go. I really do.
I would be surprised if he plays tomorrow, Hickey, because I just don't see what the purpose would be of playing him. This Kansas City opening night game is a lot more meaningful for the Detroit Lions than it is for the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, yeah, you want to see your team win, but the only real meaning for this game for the Kansas City Chiefs is to see that banner go up before the game. If they lose this game, it's not as if the Chiefs are screwed and their season is derailed. But if you lose, if let's say Travis Kelce has further injury because you rushed him back too soon and he's got to miss more time and he never gets back to 100% health, I don't think the risk is worth the reward here, is what I'm saying.
I'm with you 100%. One loss tomorrow night is not going to end your season. The loss of Travis Kelce for the rest of the year, or majority of the year, probably will. Definitely will, actually.
You don't think Mahomes could win a Super Bowl without Travis Kelce?
By himself this year? No, I do not.
Tom Brady has. I'm talking about without Rob Gronkowski, who's very comparable to Travis Kelce.
For an entire season in a loaded AFC this year, are you picking the Chiefs right now to win the Super Bowl? If, let's just say tomorrow, Travis Kelce torn ACL after the year.
Well, I think the Chiefs can get to a Super Bowl this year. When you win, I usually don't like to pick you the next year. So when I make my predictions coming up in about an hour, no, I'm not taking Kansas City.
I'm not saying picking Kansas City. I'm saying right now, if we find out today, 2 seconds from now, Travis Kelce out for the year.
Are they still a team that could get to the Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl? I still think they can.
Okay.
Because you have 15. You have an all-time great quarterback. I've seen Rob Gronkowski go down and Brady still win a Super Bowl.
Okay.
To me, as long as you have 15, he will always keep you in the game and always give your team that shot and that chance. Let's go to Joe Burrow. He says he expects to play on Sunday after the calf injury.
Yeah, I'm ready to go. We're going to see how these next couple days play out because you never know with these things, but I'm expecting to play. Like I said, we'll see how these next couple days go.
This is the biggest non-story whatsoever. This injury happened almost a month ago. Around, if not longer
over
than that?
Yeah, 6 weeks ago.
And Ja'Marr Chase added more fuel to the fire on this story. He's like, oh, he shouldn't play. He shouldn't play the first few weeks. It's a minor calf injury. He's good to go by now. He's going to play. There's no doubt about it. Let's go to Chris Jones. So this is before the Nick Bosa contract extension that was announced today. As Chris Jones was doing a charity event in the Kansas City area. Chris Jones says he hopes a contract gets done soon via the Kansas City Star.
Hopefully it gets worked out. You know, it's always been my goal to be a Kansas City Chiefs for life. I've said that multiple times on social media platforms from interviews, and they know where my position is at, and hopefully we can get something worked out.
So Nick Bosa then gets a 5-year, $170 million contract. It's like a $122-point-something guaranteed. If the Chiefs weren't close before the Nick Bosa deal, Hickey, they got to be even further apart now. And I think this is a storyline where Chris Jones, he's not going to show up and play without a contract until he has to. And he's even said this before, he's willing to sit out all the way up until week 8.
Yeah, this is not good news for the Chiefs. This is not good news because the number before you're working with is $31 million. It's Aaron Donald's number. Now, we don't know if he wants that, if he wants to be the second highest paid guy. But now, all of a sudden, you see Nick Bosa jump Aaron Donald by $3 million. Now he's getting $34 million per year. Bare minimum, that only raised Chris Jones' price, which, again, I'm with you, makes it a lot harder to get a deal done, at least by tomorrow.
Chris Jones responds to criticism that he let his teammates down.
How? That's what I got to ask. How have I let them down? It's just like when you had a job and you ask for an extension, right? And you ask for a raise, right? You're not letting anyone down. Who are you letting down for asking your boss for a raise, right?
So you could play this argument both ways. You could say, oh, well, you committed to a contract. And then people will say, you got to play, you got to honor that contract. But how many times did teams cut someone and not commit to that contract of like 4 or 5 years that they said that that's what they're going to sign you to? So I don't have a problem with what Chris Jones is doing. But the big question is, if you get to week 8 and they still don't give you a new deal, are you not going to show up? Or then you're actually going to follow through on your word and then show up? And then we'll see how he responds to that. Because remember, Le'Veon Bell originally told his teammates he was going to show up, then didn't, then didn't show up for the entire season. That's when the teammates got annoyed at him. So if he's saying on social media he's willing to sit out until week 8, if you don't get a new deal, you better than show up by week 8. Chris Jones says there's still a chance he could play on Thursday.
I don't know. I could be playing. I could be on the sideline. I don't know. We'll see tomorrow.
You don't think he's showing up until, outside of week 8, I'm talking about for tomorrow night, if he does not get a deal done, and he looks like he's in great shape, he said he'd go play tomorrow. Do you think he plays tomorrow night without a new contract?
No. No chance. Does he show up? Different story. Would you? I don't know. If I was Chris Jones, I think I would show up. I would want my ring, and I think just his presence, if he's not in uniform, maybe might help grease the skids to getting a deal done sooner than later.
I would be annoyed if I'm Kansas City if he shows up and doesn't play, because then that turns into a clown show and just dramatic. We're on the sidelines. That's what people are talking about. You have the TV coverage of that. The last game, do you read about it after the game?
If you're Chris Jones, is that what you want?
It could help Chris Jones, especially the Lions, then beat the Chiefs too in a high scoring game. I'll tell you then what we're leading with on
Friday.
Could
you imagine he's walking like off the field, hands up, like, oh, I told you so, you need me.
I think if you're there and you're not playing because of the contract, like, it's one thing to be injured, which he's not, but if you're there not playing because of the contract, I think you then look like a bad teammate and you look like a jackass if you're standing on the sidelines. If I'm him, I would stay home.
So no contract, no ring tomorrow, basically, is what is your philosophy.
Well, they already got the rings, right?
Well, I guess, yeah.
They had
no
that
banner.
Off-season event, yeah, so it's right. Just
so
a
no banner.
So what's the big deal? He's already seen one of those rings before. Sean McVay ruled out Cooper Kupp for Sunday's regular season opener for the Rams. Sean McVay, though, says Cooper Kupp could actually land on IR.
It's a possibility. You know, we'll look into that. You know, we want to be able to just kind of give him a little bit of time. We don't have to make that decision quite yet, Gary, but there's a possibility of that.
Well, the Hickey Hex has already started. Hickey's guaranteeing that the Rams are going to make the playoffs. Cooper Kupp already injured. Ugh. Mike Evans also, you're big on the Buccaneers. Looks like it's going to be his final year in Tampa Bay. It's already started.
Well, listen, after this year, that's fine. You can leave after this year, no problem.
Wait until the article comes out that the Buccaneers hate Baker Mayfield. Just wait, or they don't believe in Todd Bowles. The Hickey Hex.
Well, the Todd Bowles would make sense. That article would absolutely make sense. It's probably already been written.
See, I would say that I should place a bet that the Bucs won't win the division and the Rams won't make the playoffs, but the odds are probably horrible on that because the Rams aren't expected to make the playoffs and the Bucs aren't expected to win the division.
So if you want to win some money, ride with me. Let's go.
No, but
you could probably retire off that.
That's a bet that I just know is going to be lost. Absolutely. 1,000% confidence level on that. Rams scheduled to start out the year. Do you know their first three games of the season?
No idea. Seahawks, right? I think Seahawks.
At Seattle. San Francisco. At Cincinnati.
You know what? That's actually positive. Get hard games out of the way, put Cooper Kupp on IR, bring it back healthy, and win a lot of these manageable games, and let's go. Playoff pushes here.
Then they're at the Colts.
That's a winnable game, absolutely, for them.
Philadelphia.
Okay, that's fine.
We're going to be looking bare minimum. The best the Rams will be after 5 weeks is going to be 1-4.
Listen, the Colts made the playoffs a few years ago, starting 1-5. Okay. Could happen.
They still have Dallas on that schedule. They still have the Seahawks again. They have your Browns. the Ravens, the Commanders, the Niners again. You have a live look.
Was it Nick Sirianni and the Eagles 2 years ago or 2-5 before they turned around?
You have that. Yeah, they had talent. They have three players on the Rams, and that's it.
Rams got some talent.
They
top
have three
heavy.
Players. One that's
top
injured.
Heavy, but...
And the all three of them coming off injuries, too. And here is Hickey, a live look at Hot Take Hickey. The lone man standing on top of the hill, falling down. And you just look at him dying on that hill.
I may already be on the Titanic, but I'm not jumping. Or I guess either way, I'm not going to lifeboat. I'm going down. This is the Rams one.
The raft wasn't big enough for you, all right?
I have glued my feet to the floor, and I am riding down in glory.
All righty. Sean Alexander, former Alabama star running back, great NFL player, should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but isn't. And when a league MVP is going to join us on the other side.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Let's talk to one of our favorites, Sean Alexander, former Alabama running back, was a first-round pick, 19th overall, back in the 2000 draft by the Seattle Seahawks, 2005 NFL MVP, and as I tell him each and every time when he joins us here on CBS Sports Radio, I can't wait until there's a day that I get to introduce him as a Pro Football Hall of Famer. Because he had 100 rushing touchdowns in the NFL. Everyone said he didn't play long enough, but he still got to 100, and he should be a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And let me tell you, by the way, the Sean Alexander Freshman Player of the Year Award is given each year to the best freshman player in college football, and it's named in honor of Sean since 2018 due to his tremendous freshman campaign for the University of Alabama back in 1996. Sean Alexander, appreciate the time. How are you?
My brother Zach, man, how you doing? We're doing great over here.
Well, yeah, I know you have your hands busy. I know last time we talked, you said your wife was expecting baby number 13, so congratulations.
Yeah, number 13's here. It's actually girl number 10. I'm girl dad times 10 over here, and it's wild. It's wild, you know, I tell everybody. Yeah, it's wild.
We got too many children on the field now, like well over, Sean.
Oh, yeah. We can run plays and sub people in and, you know, run packages on and off the field. It's pretty cool.
So how do you manage all this? Like, I couldn't even imagine being like a father to like two or three children. You have 13. So what kind of car do you have? How many cars do you have? What's that situation looking like?
You know, when the ages are so big and different, you know, the oldest is a sophomore in college. She's 19, and the baby's, what, 6 weeks now? So rarely do all of them all go to the same place at the same time, and unless we're taking a summer family trip. So you got to take the 15-passenger van. But, you know, how you run it is like how you run a good football team. You know, you get the captains to be on your side, and they start managing some of the players, kind of like, hey, this is the culture. We don't do that. We do this. And you know, having 10 girls, I literally have 10 more moms in the house. So it starts to work until some girls get to a certain age, and then it becomes a little difficult. But overall, man, they handle each other well, and it's a lot of fun.
The food bill and food shopping must be fun.
Yeah. Now, that's always hot. You know, like when we go shopping, most people ask us, do we own a store?
That's unbelievable. Sean Alexander here with us. Hey, by the way, I'm excited for this weekend. This is going to be a heck of a football game between Alabama and Texas on Saturday night.
Oh, yeah. Now, these are games that Bama fans love. You know, we pride ourselves on championships, but there's something sweet about playing against other great schools and other conferences, and Texas is about to come over, but it's always special to play the Texases, the Penn States, the USCs, you know, the other teams that kind of run their other areas, and so this is a special one for us, and they'll be in Tuscaloosa, and we're eagerly excited about this football team, you know, and it's one of the things that people can get old, but there's an old saying that you know who likes winning. The one who's always doing it.
And you know what the best part about this is? Every year we talk about Nick Saban, and he usually gets on the media for, you know, them giving him too much praise. Now people are doubted Alabama, so he gets to actually have something to motivate his players with.
Oh, yeah, we love it. We love it. I mean, we've got a defense that's going to be one of those write it down. They're going to tell a story. And so And so we like that. We like the years where people are not sure about the offense and the defense is spectacular and everybody can go make plays. And that chip on your shoulder is always – it's much easier to play with the chip. You know, I mean, it's always easier to be chasing, you know. And so we're at that place. We haven't been there really in a long time.
So with Alabama, Sean Alexander is here with us. For the last few years, the Alabama fan got accustomed to having this great quarterback on paper. Now there's questions about Jalen Milroe. I know it was up against Middle Tennessee, but you can only go up against the teams that you're playing. To have five total touchdowns, what do you kind of view? What's your view of the quarterback in Jalen Milroe for this year?
Yeah, he's a good ball player. I mean, everybody at our school is going to be good. And so it's can they go perform great in the big game? And I think he can. I think that, you know, like you said, you go from Tua and Jalen and Mark. You know what I mean? Like, Mac, I mean, you know, you're like, oh, we've got three great pro quarterbacks to you know, to Heisman, you know. Like,
Bryce Young, too.
When you walk in, yeah, Bryce, yeah, you go to, you know, those four guys just coming back to back to back to back. You're like, oh, well, this is what we do. But that's not what we've always done. What we've done is played great defense, ran the ball, controlled the clock, and punched it in when we needed to. And so we look more like that this year. But those points always felt good, you know what I mean? So it's kind of a little more old school Bama ball, and we're going to challenge people to beat us. Being what we do is, you know, controlling the clock and beating you up for 60 minutes. You know.
Let me get to your pro team, the Seattle Seahawks. I look at this offense on paper with Kenneth Walker, Zach Charbonnet. You got the three receivers, Metcalf, Lockett, and now Jaxon Smith-Njigba. This looks like a loaded offense. The only question is, will there be some regression with Geno Smith? Where's your confidence with the signal caller for the Seahawks?
You know, I'm of course I get to be close with all the players, and I've been so proud of Geno's, you know, prep for this year, prep for every day, prep for the off season. You know, he came into this off season hoping, and so this is the first time where it's like, hey, there's no pressure on you except go be the best version of yourself. And so, like, that's how he's been practicing, training, and he looks great. You know, even last year, we was like, oh, okay, you know. But now he even feels more confident about what he's doing. And, you know, Pete Carroll's a great coach. He's going to put him in the right place and to go be the best version of himself. And it's going to be pretty awesome. It's going to be great because they, too, the Seahawks, have that defense that has a chip on their shoulder again. And we know that turned out really, really good about 10 years ago. So here they go. Pete's kind of reinventing himself again with the same kind of style. Unknown quarterbacks, strong defense, great running game, some more than willing receivers. And so it's going to be pretty cool.
Talking to Sean Alexander right now. I like Kenneth Walker a lot. He was my favorite running back in the draft from 2 years ago. Then they add Zach Charbonnet out of UCLA. You got some backs there, some youngsters. What do you see out of those two running backs?
Yeah, you know, actually, I texted Zach when he first came in. It was like, brother, you can play. You know, and so sometimes you just need to hear that from some people that have played well before. And he's a hard worker. He's going to get it done. But Kenneth, man, he's special. You know, I knew when we first got him, he has a knack for the end zone. He knows how to burst through holes really, really well. And it's more than just, oh, just run through the hole. Like, he times it up, sets up the blockers, and then it's an explosion. So, you know, he's going to play well this year.
When you look at the running back position now in the NFL, it's more running back by committee these days. They're still star running backs. But the star running backs aren't getting paid. I know you've been following all the conversation this offseason. When you look at the whole running back and the state of the position, what comes to mind for you, Sean Alexander?
You know, I said a couple, maybe about 4 years ago, one of the things I didn't like was that read option that they were starting to do in high school because it was taking the power away from the running back to go control the game. It was almost like the quarterback's going to hold it. Oh, yeah, but the play works, run. You know what I mean? And so now you could just go get any fast guy to go play it. And so the guys like me that were like, hey, I'm 7 yards deep, hand it to me back there. I'm going to go A gap, B gap, C gap, cut, you know. And if you give it to me enough times, I'm going to eventually take the will out of the defense. Well, now it's all in the quarterback's mind. So the kind of running back that was like 30 carries, it's all going to be on me, those guys are moving to safety and are moving to linebacker now because it's kind of like a speed kind of guy. So what's happening is now they're like, oh, well, we can just go plug anybody in this thing. And so that's trickled on up, that kind of running back's trickled on up to the league, and a lot of guys are not getting the respect, the honor, the pay that they should get, because the thing is still true, a great running back can help the quarterback and makes the whole offense great. And I think the NFL is going to have to do something about it. I've really tried to encourage and challenge both the NFLPA and the NFL to find a way to find the bonus structure. You know, because if a running back's not playing good, it's okay. Like, let him get what he's getting. But when you got Dalvin Cook trying to find a job, you got Joshua Jacobs, you know what I mean? Like, come on. Like, how are these guys the lead the league in rushing the last couple years, and they're having trouble finding teams and getting paid over $10 million? No, that's impossible to be able to do that. And so I think that all of them, with the boys, Saquon and all of them, they all signed like, what, 11, 12? I think all of them would take a $10 million deal, but if they led the league in rushing, it needs to double, like $18 million, you know, $20 million. So now they're paid for the value that they bring, and it should not hurt the team. So they got to go figure out something like that where the top guys get super bonuses, and it doesn't hurt anybody for a job well done. That's what I think it could get to.
Sean Alexander here with us. If you were in high school, like freshman year of high school now, would you change position knowing where this is trending with the running backs in terms of payment?
Yeah, you know, I would play like Bo. I play like a slot receiver and running back. So I had to go get rid of my big shoulder pads. You know what I mean? Because the receivers still get paid a lot of money. And then you go play in the backfield, you know. The guy that did it when we were there was Hines Ward. You know what I mean? Like, so he was like a kind of run the reverse, you know, kind of guy. And so, you know, I think that's what I would have done.
Wrapping up with Sean Alexander, I want to get your thoughts before we talk about the award. There was an article out by Seth Wickersham, and he said that Sean Payton told Russell Wilson, you got to focus more on football and less on Russell Inc. And he said, will you bleep and stop kissing all the babies? You're not running for public office. I thought that was a good message for Sean, because Russ lost his way last year in the NFL. What type of year do you think Russell Wilson's going to have? I know you know him well. And what did you make of Sean's comments?
There's a little truth in everything. You know what I mean? Like, I think, like, everybody has a thing that makes them great, and that same thing could also make them a little off. You know what I mean? And so I think that to get a coach like Sean Payton and say, hey, you push me to go be the best, and I'm going to go be the best. And that's what Russell needs. And so I think that whatever he's doing, it's going to work, because he knows how to go make quarterbacks great. I think Russell's going to play lights out this year. You know, my son and I, we was watching the first game when it was the Seahawks versus the Broncos, and he gets down to the fourth quarter, you know, 4 minutes left, I think it was 3 minutes left. Russell has the ball. The Broncos are driving. And my son looks at me and says, Dad, what's going to happen? I said, what do you think's going to happen? He goes, man, we've seen Russell do this so many times. Here's a 13-year-old little boy that's saying, like, he's like, I'm just now starting to really watch the game and know what's going on. And we all know what Russell does with the ball in his hands. And what did the Broncos do? They let about 2 minutes clock run off the clock and then call a timeout and kick like a 90-yard field goal. Come on. Like, that breaks the psyche of everybody. Even the most strongest men start to wonder, well, man, do we really believe in me? And so I feel like they as a group second-guess themselves the whole way through from that point on. Clearly the kicker misses the kick, the Seahawks win. It goes great for Geno the rest of the way, but terrible for Russell. So I don't think Sean's going to do that. He's going to have some things that's going to be better for Russell all the way through, and Russell's going to play great.
Tell me the latest with the Sean Alexander Freshman Player of the Year Award.
Oh, man, so it's really cool, man. So we just announced the Hot 37, which is really the watch list, you know, the 37 incoming high school kids and or redshirt guys that we think are going to go lights out. and it's all to kind of start to spark, like, man, we're looking for the next prince of college football. Who's going to be that guy that is going to be a name for handful of years? Like, you know, Trevor Lawrence was our first winner. He wins national championship at Clemson. And then you got Kenneth Gainwell, who was, you know, with Memphis, but went on and played it with the Eagles last year and had a great, great year in pro so far. You got Will Anderson, the 3 overall pick, Bama. He won a national championship. Brock Bowers, he won a national championship. I didn't realize we picked 3 national champions, but at Georgia. But it's really cool grabbing these guys at their young age of 18, 19 years old and being a part of just a little of their life to watch them grow to be these stars. And we always say we need talent, we need character, they need to be an ambassador to the university, and what we call a legend to the NFL. Like, we just see NFL talent in them, and we've picked 5 great winners. Drake May won it last year, and he's just a stud. And so it's been really cool watching this thing happen, getting to be a part of picking the players and getting to help them mold them in whatever way Uncle Sean can do it to help them be the best they can be on the field and hopefully have great NFL careers.
Any of your boys playing football these days?
Yeah, I'm actually going to leave from here to go watch my son. He's 8th grade. And he's plays safety, plays corner.
Not running back. That's what I'm hearing, Sean.
Yeah, he's nice. He does play wide receiver when he is on offense. And so, you know what? Safeties get paid too much too nowadays. So I'm like, hey, let's move over there. You know, and it's my next 2 sons that probably play offense. They got a little more wiggle. Where my oldest son, he's you know, all downhill. Like, let's go hit people. So it's gonna be fun, man. It's gonna be fun watching them.
Coach Prime already on the phone. Nick Saban already on the phone. How's the recruiting going here?
It's really wild. You know, I don't tell too many people, but you're like family already. So my oldest daughter is already a sophomore in college. She writes songs, does music, piano. She plays like 4 or 5 instruments. But the next 2, one just graduated, so she'll run track. And the 3rd one, they're track All-Americans. So it's pretty exciting already that they're just seeing – The girls become athletes, and so the boys come right behind them. So they're 8th and 6th grade. So we'll see. We'll see as it goes, man.
The NIL money, I could already hear it flowing right to the bank account. There we go. Sean Alexander. different worlds we live in now, Sean. They don't got to give you any bags of cash now. They can just give it to you all up front. They don't have to hide it anymore.
Man, just like it's nothing, huh?
Sean Alexander, once again, the Sean Alexander Freshman Player of the Year Award is given each year to the best freshman player in college football, named in honor of Sean since 2018 due to his tremendous freshman campaign for the University of Alabama in 1996. They look for talent, character, being an ambassador, and also a legend as well. Sean, we appreciate the time. You're the best. Congratulations to you, the family.
No doubt, man. Thank you. Roll Tide.
There you go. Sean Alexander here with us on the Zach Gelb Show. Always love our conversations with him. Just such a good, genuine dude. And always a character when he joins us on the show.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
I'll tell you a story that I'm already tired about. And that is this idea that Caleb Williams is going to return to USC next season. Give me a break. Now, he does have leverage. We all know how much money he can make with NIL. And he can go get another year of that. And maybe he wants to pull a Eli Manning and leave and then say you're not going to play for one team with the Chargers and force your way somewhere else. So there's things that you could do if you're Caleb Williams. But I just don't believe for a single second that Caleb Williams, who will be the number 1 overall pick in this year's draft, whether he gets traded or not, or another team moves up to go get the number 1 pick, another team gets like 4 or 5 first-round picks, whatever it would be, you're definitely coming out of college after this year. Because you're going to have a really good season, bare minimum, this year. I don't think you're making the college football playoff, but you'll be a Heisman Trophy finalist. You have a chance to be in the college football playoff. I'm just not believing in that defense of USC. But we already heard from Caleb Williams. He hasn't made that decision yet. Fine, you hear that all the time. Like, even C.J. Stroud, we all knew C.J. Stroud was coming out after this year. When I saw him at the Heisman, he said he hasn't made that decision yet. Which, you knew it's bull crap, but I understand why players aren't going to say that right in the moment, their intention, because they're focused on winning games and giving it their all for their college. But now, Carl Williams, Caleb Williams' father, he told GQ Magazine that the funky thing about the NFL draft process is he'd almost be better off not being drafted than being drafted first. The system is completely backwards. The way the system is constructed, you go to the worst possible situation, the worst possible team, the worst organization in the league because of their desire for parity to get the first pick. So it's the gift and the curse. So if there's no good, if there's not a good situation, the truth is he could come back to school. Here's what I don't get about this, Hickey. Number one, I wouldn't get why you would pass up being the number one overall draft pick. But then number two, you could have that team that you don't want to go to be the number one draft pick again the following season. Like the Jaguars back-to-back years had the number one pick, and they took Trevor Lawrence and then Trayvon Walker. Also, as you just said, most of the time, the team picking first overall, some years you get lucky with the trade or you move up and you're a better team and it was just you had a few injuries and then things got carried away. But 9 times out of 10, and you don't need a PhD in football to figure this one out, the team that's picking first overall is a really bad team in a bad situation. So let's just say if the Cardinals had the first overall pick this year, the Cardinals could have the first overall pick the year after that. Or you could have another crappy team, like let's say the Indianapolis Colts 2 years from now, which is a miserable situation, which I know Hickey would love, where you wait a year and they could still be the team that has the number one overall pick the following year, and that's still a dysfunctional situation. So I don't see at all why Caleb Williams would come back for another season of college football after this year when he is without a doubt going to be the number one overall pick.
I don't think it's going to happen with Caleb. I do, though, think we will see a situation sooner rather than later where a number one pick does say, you know, I'm going back to school. I think NIL, now it's going to take a certain situation and a certain player. We are now seeing more and more money going to kids. I don't think it's crazy to think that one kid 1 year could say, you know what? I could make $10 million, let's just say USC, if I'm Caleb Williams. I could, if I make a push, maybe could rally the boosters and I can get a $10 million NIL deal to go back to USC for 2024 versus going to the Cardinals. Again, you're going to make a lot of money. I think, what, the first overall pick is like $40 million over the life of a four-year contract. So you're still going to make more money in the NFL, but at least for 1 year, you'd make more money at USC than you would in your rookie year as an NFL quarterback. I think eventually, not this early on, like not this year, but it would be a Caleb Williams-type player at a massive university. I think we will see someone say, you know what? Cardinals, Colts, whoever, I'm good. I'm going to go back to college.
So that's an interesting point that you bring up. And you're allowed to then take that money now legally, so it could extend a player's career, maybe make him want to go back to college. But I think that's more outside of the quarterback position. Like, for example, Blake Corum. Blake Corum had a great season, injury at the end of the year, elected to go back to college. I'm sure he's getting paid a king's ransom in terms of NIL. Instead, if he would have came out of college and gone to the draft coming off that injury, and now the running back position is now devalued, I don't know where he would have gone in the draft. So I can understand it from there. But when it comes to a quarterback, if you're going to be the first, second, or third pick in the draft, I'm taking that opportunity when it's guaranteed 10 times out of 10. Like the last player that I remember quarterback that I thought it was controversial when he came back, there was so much preseason buzz around Justin Herbert. And then Justin Herbert elected to go back for another year. He still was the 6th overall pick. It went Burrow 1, 2 of 5, and Herbert 6. But you look back at it, that 2019 draft class, you had Kyler Murray going 1, then the late Dwayne Haskins going 15. Daniel Jones was in between there at 6. It's like if you're Justin Herbert, you went back. You had a season that was up and down, but finished on a good note, right? You win the Rose Bowl, and you were still the third quarterback off the board. Like if Justin Herbert came out of college that year, I would think that he would have been drafted, maybe not in front of Kyler, because Kyler won the Heisman, but he probably would have been drafted in front of Daniel Jones, and Jones ended up going 6, the same spot that Herbert ended up going a year later. So I don't really see what the benefit would be if it's just to avoid the situation. Now, it brings up another thing. Do you think the NFL should go to a lottery system? So it's not as if just if you get the number one overall pick, you're guaranteed to, if you have the worst record, that you're guaranteed to be the number one overall pick. Do you think they should go something like what the NBA does?
I don't think the NFL should, but on that note of lottery, forget about just the odds changing with your record. What if it's a blank lottery or an even lottery? Every team, same odds. Your record is irrelevant.
So, like, the Kansas City Chiefs could get the first round, first overall.
Every, you know, whatever 32 teams divided by whatever, you know, I guess 30, whatever, how you calculated it. Everyone could else just say it's 5% odds.
Could you imagine?
The number one overall pick.
I would not like that. I think if you're the worst team, you should get the number one overall pick. I don't like the idea of a lottery, but could you imagine Chiefs win the Super Bowl and you know, this year again, you have Patrick Mahomes. You're not going to get rid of Patrick Mahomes, but then you're going to go get like four first round picks for Caleb Williams. Then everyone's going to be bitching, oh, it's not fair. The rich get richer. So, like, a lot of people say, oh, if you're a bad team, you shouldn't get rewarded with the number one overall pick. It's unfair to the player. But then it would be, oh, the rich get richer. So I think you keep the system as is. I think this is just Caleb's family adding more fuel to the fire in this speculation. But you know it, and I know it. At the end of this college football season, it doesn't matter who the team is the number one overall pick. You'll figure that out later if you want to try to force your way somewhere else. You know that you're going to take that opportunity to be the number one overall pick, and you're not going back to USC. We preview the 2023 NFL season next.